Welcome to Conversations with Owens Community College President, Dr. Dion D. Somerville. Welcome to today's episode of the Conversations Podcast. I'm Dr. Dion D. Somerville. Thank you for listening today. Whether this is your first time with us or if you're a longtime follower, we're so happy that you're joining us as we explore the issues and meet the people who are important to Northwest Ohio and to Owens Community College. Thank you for listening today. Please enjoy our previous episodes and subscribe to Conversations to join us for future episodes. Today, I am so excited to welcome Betsy and Tom Brady, entrepreneurs, philanthropists, and steadfast champions of education in Northwest Ohio. Dr. Tom Brady earned engineering degrees from Dartmouth and a PhD in plastics engineering from the University of Michigan before founding and leading Plastic Technologies Incorporated, a global innovator in plastics packaging. Tom was part of the team that invented the plastic bottle used for pop and the technology to recycle it. Later in his career, he served as interim dean of the Judith Herb College of Education at the University of Toledo. Tom is a member of the Plastics Hall of Fame and has authored 3 books. His wife, Betsy, a Smith College graduate, helped grow PTI as vice president of finance and administration. She went on to serve as the first woman to chair both the Toledo Area Chamber of Commerce and the Toledo Museum of Art. Betsy has served on multiple corporate boards and volunteered for numerous community organizations. Together, they continue to invest deeply in preparing future educators and leaders. Hi, Betsy and Tom. Thank you so much for being our guests today. Betsy and Tom, I am so excited to have you both on the Conversations podcast. I laugh all the time about our relationship because, of course, I have the privilege of being on the Toledo Museum of Art Board, and Betsy, you were assigned as my mentor. And as we would go for our mentoring sessions, I had the benefit of getting a bonus mentor in Tom. And so I'm very glad for that and for the relationship and the conversations that we've been able to have over my last few years here. And so I'm glad that we get to share some of our conversations with our listeners for the podcast. So thank you both for being here. One of the ways that we start each of our podcasts is by asking our guests how they knew they needed education beyond high school. I have it on good authority that both of you went away to school. And so can you talk about your journey to and through higher education and what that decision-making process was like for both of you?
Mine is kind of interesting as I've thought about it. I don't think I was very aware at that stage what my life was going to be or what I was going to do. It was always part of our family. There was an expectation that we would be going to college. So that was a given. When it came to time for where, I just really had almost no exposure to various places. So I ended up going to Smith College, then Northampton, Massachusetts. So it is a way, I think really because my mom went there and I was very close to my mom and felt like a good fit. We were there, made the family happy. So, and it turned out just to be a great place to be. So I was very happy with it, but I can't say there was a whole lot of deep thought that went into it. And I think that's so typical of 18-year-olds. You just don't know yet. And even more so, 50 or more years ago, that was less a part of the exploration process than it is today.
Well, and especially when there's a family tradition, too.
Yes, that made it an easy choice.
Absolutely, it does.
Now, I went to Maumee High School, graduated in 1962, and I was sort of captain of the football team. So I was being recruited by the University of Michigan. Bump Elliott was there at the time. And of course, I was all excited and said I was going to go there. And then I got accepted at a number of other universities. And I'll tell you why one of them, Dartmouth, was on my list. But my dad, who never gave me any advice, took me out for breakfast one Sunday morning. And he told me 2 things. He said, you ought to think long and hard before you turn down the opportunity to go to Dartmouth, no matter how expensive it is. And the second thing he told me was, if you really want to play football, you probably ought to go to Dartmouth. Now, I won't say that's the reason I went. And in fact, I did go and I did play and I have 2 metal knees today. Had I gone to Michigan, my knees would probably be fine. But my 8th grade teacher, Ethel Wellstead, had 2 sons who both went to Dartmouth. And one was 3 years older and my mentor. I got his paper out. He was captain of the football team. I was captain of the football team. He lived 2 blocks away from me. And so I knew about Dartmouth, where I probably would not have. I mean, I was a kid from the Midwest. And frankly, that was the only Ivy League school that I applied to. But the football coach came all the way out to Toledo to talk with me. And frankly, one of the things that he told me, which even back then was new but convinced me, he told me they had a unique engineering program. And I had an interest in engineering because my dad was an engineer. But fundamentally, you got a Bachelor of Arts in engineering, not a Bachelor of Science. So what he told me, which is what happened, you learn lots of things that have to do with how you use engineering, not just doing engineering, business, economics, humanities, all of those kind of things. So it intrigued me. So I ended up going, I like to say, not just to play football.
Although that was an important part of it. Well, and then after you graduated from Dartmouth, you went on to get a couple of other degrees. And so kind of what was that decision making like for you?
Well, of course, by then I was a little more sophisticated in how I was thinking about things. But again, and this is why when I look at people like you, mentoring is so important. I mean, at that point, I had a bachelor's degree. I could have gone and gotten a job. But I had professors that were encouraging me to not just come back to Dartmouth, although I did get my master's degree there, but to go somewhere else. And they recognized that one of my interests was innovation and development, not just putting things together. So I got that kind of advice. And in fact, several of the professors I had at Dartmouth had come from the Midwest, one of them from Michigan. So they encouraged me to consider it. And I think that's why I did. Now, I got to tell you the real reason. So I'm in New Hampshire. Betsy's in Northampton, Massachusetts. We had no idea. We didn't know each other. But when I was a senior and she was a sophomore, we got fixed up on a blind date.
800 miles away from home.
And turns out her brother was a year ahead of me at Dartmouth. Her father had graduated from Dartmouth. She lived 9 miles away from me at home. And I fell in love right away.
You were always smart.
But I was 2 years ahead of her. So when I graduated from Dartmouth, I like to say I stayed for engineering, but I really stayed to get a master's degree because she wasn't going to graduate for 2 years. And so then we got married. Then we went to the University of Michigan, and she worked hard to put me through Michigan. So there's a little complication to the story.
Oh, but it is so fantastic because I always laugh at the fact that you guys were almost neighbors by metropolitan standards, and then you had to go up to the East Coast to meet each other. So it's an awesome story.
And we've said we wouldn't have crossed paths here. We never had, and we probably would not have, just being different parts of town. And again, you weren't quite as mobile around town in those days as teenagers are now.
Do the people who set you up on your blind date, do you still keep in touch? Like, do they know how this all kind of turned out?
No. Interestingly, the way it evolved, it was sort of a second, third hand fix up because he had dated a girl at Smith and then they were no longer going to be dating. And so he'd asked her, you kind of like Smithies. Would you get me somebody else? Well, she didn't want to be right in the middle of it. So she happened to be friends with somebody else who was friends with somebody else. But the other piece that's kind of amazing and is a piece of fate, when we were set up to go out, I had ended up very sick with mono. I was actually hospitalized with it because they hadn't diagnosed it for a couple of months. And so I was really weakened from it. And he, for whatever set of reasons, so he went out with another friend of mine then. We got him a substitute date. But he wrote me a letter.
Really?
Which nobody does.
Which nobody would have ever done that back then.
Knowing that there was any connection. Nobody on any side had a clue where we were from.
Something caused me to write that letter. And she gets a letter from a Dartmouth guy that would never write a letter. And she thinks,
and I'm sick as a dog and I'm worried about I'm going to funk out of school. Here's this boy I've never met who is sending me this lovely, kind letter. So, we had when we finally did get to go out, we sort of had a, maybe
baseline.
A head start on thinking each other were really nice people, that we're glad this is working now.
It's a good start.
Well, I want to tell you, I never dated another girl.
That's good to know.
All the way up to today.
Have that on the record.
But beyond that, I was at Smith, was all women. And I had signed up. I had started sort of And after about sophomore, you know, I was into sophomore year, and I thought, you know, I'm just curious, being at a girls' school, how different it would be being at a co-ed school. So I had enlisted to go to Michigan for the summer, taking some classes, not because I needed the classes, but because I wanted to experience a different college, to experience. Well, guess what? I was coming home every weekend. I never got the full benefit. Be talking to some nice guy, and they'd want to go out, and it's like, well, I'm not here this weekend. Well, next weekend either. Well.
So when you guys both went to Michigan, was it partly because you had already had that experience up there?
She went to work, actually, as an administrative person in the medical college at the time to work while I for 3.5 years while I went to school. And I needed
and they were
her to
particularly
work.
Moving into plastics there. So it was something he had done some work with on his master's thesis at Dartmouth. So it just happened to be the right place. We loved it. We're both family people. So, you know, being not so far away, we were our own independent married life, but also close to family.
Everything really just lined up the way it was supposed to line up. Yeah. I mean, it's like if you said fate, but it's like if the universe is really going to put it together.
And anticipating one of your questions, I mean, we came back to Toledo, right? Both our parents were here, but I had accepted a job when I left, actually, at Western Electric out in Princeton, New Jersey, which was really a delightful or a great place. But there was an Owens, Illinois manager who came to recruit at University of Michigan. And he got me interested because he said we were going to do some new things. And as it happens, he brought me down and we walked through the Owens, Illinois glass laboratories. They had plastics too and paper. And there was a man standing on a 12-foot stepladder dropping 64-ounce glass bottles coated in plastic, trying to make one that wouldn't kill anybody when it exploded. And what he told me was that all the bottles back then were 12 ounces or smaller, and they were all metal or glass. And he told me that Coke had just come to the beverage companies like Owens, Illinois, and said, can you make family-sized containers? He looked at me and said, I think we ought to do that out of plastic. That's your assignment. So when I walked into Owens, Illinois, that was what I got to look at.
Yeah. So fast forward to how that evolved, because part of the story that I'm unclear on is what you did in Owens, Illinois, and when the two of you started PTI, and what you were able to innovate independently.
Interestingly, most of the people that I hired, I couldn't go to Dartmouth or Michigan and hire people. I went to the University of Toledo, and I hired a number of people that you probably even know who now have retired, but helped me. Anyway, we developed this plastic bottle technology at OI. Now, I won't say that we were the only company doing this, but we were one of the first. And in fact, I designed that first bottle on my desk. Mm-hmm. Didn't have computers back then. And we commercialized it. We put up 4 plants from the East Coast to the West Coast. And Owens, Illinois literally was leading the industry at that point. And we went to the board, I and several other executives, asking for more money to expand it. They were all glass people. They looked at us and said, no, we're not going to expand it. You're affecting our glass business. So they said no, but they promoted me to be a vice president. Owens, Illinois had just built what's now the Fifth Third building. That was a new OI building back then in the early 80s. Made me a vice president. I had a office looking out on the river on the 23rd floor. I had 650 people reporting to me. I'd been in there a couple of months, and a bottler from Coca-Cola in Texas called me. And he said, if you aren't going to make these bottles, we'd like to self-manufacture them. Would you come and help us? My dad thought I was nuts. Betsy, bless her heart, said, go for it. I literally walked out of the Owens, Illinois building on December 23rd of 1985, took an office by myself in downtown Toledo, looking up at the OI building, working for the Coke organization, headquartered out of Texas and Alabama, and we put them in self-manufacturing. I eventually hired people that, names like Bob Dierdorf and Scott Steele, who had graduated, and we put them in self-manufacture. Colgate came to us and wanted to know whether they could make bottles. We designed all their bottles. We put them in self-manufacture. The water people came. We did that. And that, all of that happened here in Toledo. And so one of the reasons I wrote the 3 books was this was amazing Toledo story. It was Toledo people, and it developed something that really touched everybody on this planet.
I would just add to that, that when the Coke guy had come and Tom had decided he was kind of fed up with big company because they had thwarted what he saw as so much potential that could be happening. And it was so frustrating to him. He had said to them, he said, I'm really not interested in another big company and all the everything that goes with that, but I'd be willing to start a company, do it on my own, and then hire people as needed. And they agreed to that. So, you know, and that kind of goes to the whole entrepreneurial piece that I think we has always been here in Toledo and that we're working hard today, continuing, trying to support and find the places where the knowledge base is there and the ideas are there to build something new from it.
So I have to add something to that because remember, when I started a company, we had kids that were 6, 9, and 13. And yes, I knew a lot about what the technology was, but I didn't know how to run a company. Guess who, for no pay, helped me? Betsy, right? And actually, with all our companies over the years, she's the one that took charge of creating and orchestrating the administration, finance, and legal functions. So I had somebody to do that that I automatically trusted.
Well, but one of the things that I always admire about your relationship is that it is truly a partnership. And so you've mentioned before how Betsy was really the one who kind of, you know, helped build the foundation, things of that nature. And you were the one who were then able to do the innovative, you know, working with the customers and being able to bring the technology to a way that you could get it to market.
Absolutely true. And in fact, if you think about why a lot of companies don't succeed, it is because they can't put all the pieces together that you have to run a company. It's not just about knowing how to make a plastic bottle.
So Toledo, and you talked about how, you know, the glass industry and just bottling and containers in general were a really big deal, which, and they still are. You're both from the area. How have you seen the area really evolve? Because I know we've talked a little bit about some ebbs and flows and things of that nature. But, you know, if you could kind of put it in a nutshell for someone who might not be familiar with the area.
Well, let me start. My perspective is, and of course, remember, I started at Owens, Illinois, and I know and still know lots of people that were at Owens Corning and Libby Owens Ford and Jeep and all of these really Fortune 100, 500 companies that were here in Toledo. And so my perspective is, and I know, they brought a lot of talent, if you will, and professional talent collectively to Toledo. And I think that collective talent has been in part responsible for, and I could give you a number of examples, for where we are today with museums and symphonies and imagination stations and all of these things, not just because of those people, but that was the fundamental foundation for what I think created what we have in Toledo that many times we don't really understand how important it is with all of those, not business, but collective artistic and cultural organizations. So I think that's really set us apart.
And I guess, you know, just thinking about how things go, because things do ebb and flow, and the world changes, and the world changes very quickly, and ever, ever more quickly. So to me, the key of it always is the right leadership, and the leadership who can, you know, inspire, can have the vision, the foresightedness to see not just where we've been, but where are things going, and what role can we play in that? And that's in everything, whether it's, you know, whether it's in the business world or the nonprofit world or the education world, all of those things that, you know, and again, we've had some more challenging times in and out with the city, but I think we've got an awful lot of good thinkers here now, and people who really care. I think this is community people really care about, and that the key is to sort of keep working through the challenges and keep seeing what can we build and what can we build together. And part of it is the relationships that you get, and relationship for, in one thing tends to play over then also into relationships and other things. You start putting pieces together that, you know, if you didn't have those wouldn't be obvious things. We learn from each other. We're inspired by each other. And that's going to be, I think, the key to our success. We're a city that's in some ways a small town. There's a lot of interconnectivity. And I see that as a great value and key that we keep getting leaders that, you know, are forward thinkers and have the capacity to then build teams and have a plan and move it forward And that's highly energizing. It's what keeps people here. And it's why we want to keep those things that will keep then our own young people here and attract others to come.
Maybe playing off of your word team. So I started PTI and I hired people at Owens Illinois and they came with me and so forth. All four of the other companies were the brain children of one of the people that I hired, not me. It was Bob Dierdorf, who was developing the first Colgate packaging in New York when they said, do you think we could recycle this stuff? So Bob came back and, oh, by the way, Phoenix Technologies, you may know, and Bowling Green, which is one of the large PET recycling companies that we started back in 1991, was Bob and Don Hayward, who were both UT graduates. And they were the ones that had the idea and figured out how to do it, started it. And I could say that about PTI Europe, where Frank Zamirski went over to PTI Europe, or any of the others that we started. They were all started by somebody else. So part of what I say sort of tongue-in-cheek, but it's not really tongue-in-cheek, is you ought to hire a bunch of smart people and get out of their way, which is what I did, including Betsy.
Kind of did. But I always put a caveat to that because there's a piece of that that's true. Give them responsibility. Let them take it. Let it be their baby because they're going to be passionate about it. But I think you also have to continually be behind them, supporting, encouraging, helping guide, you know, put in the pieces, see something, not in a way that you're impinging or taking over, you know, that thought process, but just, you know, Keep it moving ever forward. I mean, Tom is great at asking the tough questions, as you know.
Absolutely.
And saying, okay, or have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? A mind that is just always going on those things. You need both, particularly for younger people starting out. We got an advisory board
very quickly with
PTI.
Her dad and other bankers and business people in town that I knew, my first advisory board was Fortune 100 company executives that said they wanted to help me.
Yeah.
But I will just add another thing, and I give really Betsy credit for this. We very quickly decided that we wanted to be as much their company as our company. And so we began very early offering stock ownership. And frankly, after 15 years, we probably owned less than half of the companies. But we had brought along people where it was as much theirs as it was ours. And I would guess for 25 years, I don't think any of our professionals ever left. They were all there. They were the most knowledgeable people in the world because they'd done the most. And oh, by the way, they were the ones that started all the other companies.
It's about that team. It's about that,
yes,
that ownership, that group ownership from a symbolic perspective, as well as from a very tangible perspective that you created that kind of culture.
Yeah. And that culture led to such high energy and, you know, just continually thinking about what else can we do? How do we do it? And having the support to do it. And not everything works. I mean, for sure, not everything works when you're, you know, building things.
But if you have that kind of culture, you can figure out how to rebound from that into something that's going to be more.
Yeah, you just pivot a bit and rearrange and, you know, and we always build. Part of what I did as a financial person, I was very conservative. I made sure we had money in the bank. That just knowing there would be bumps and there would be opportunities and needing to have enough resources. We also believed in bonuses. When we had a really good year, and we had many of them, everybody in the company was recognized with it. So that, you know, that combination of things, I think, was really important for people feeling that big comfort. And we were such a family company. You know, we did do family events. We figured out when our first female engineer was pregnant and figuring out we got to make our own rules. How are we going to handle with this? Well, we can handle it. How do you want to handle? What's going to work for you? Because we want you back. This is a really important moment in life. We had kids. We appreciated what that's all about. And you want people to have the satisfaction, you know, not be torn between. That combination of really caring about your people and at the same time giving them opportunities, you know, or responding when they come with an idea about check it out.
So you invest in people, you know, be they in your companies or in education. And so for both of you, clearly education is important. And your engagement and involvement there really speaks to the totality of it. And Tom, you had talked about education and your support of it early on in our conversation. And so where did that come from? I mean, clearly both of you value it because of your own life path. But, you know, in terms of the support, the engagement, you know, you're both involved in different educational initiatives in our community. You're both very generous when it comes to, you know, philanthropic support of education. And so how did that come to be?
Let me maybe start. As it happens, my mother's father, my grandfather, Jesse Ward, whose picture was on the wall at UT, founded the College of Secondary Education at UT back in 1927. My mom graduated from UT, went and taught in the Maumee schools for 40 years. Both aunts, my grandmother, both sisters were all teachers. So I had a lot of that around me. And that isn't the reason, but my grandfather is kind of a mentor. I can remember I used to go to his house to stay overnight, and he would take me to UT in the morning and put me in the dirt floor gym where I could shoot baskets. Back to your question, not just that it was he, but it's mentorship in many ways that shows you what life is all about and what's important. And so I think I had that. And of course, when I really wanted to get into innovation and entrepreneurship and creativity, I needed more knowledge and had it.
It's amazing the opportunities that we have for folks here. And the three of us talk a lot about higher education and the institutions that are around, not only the publics, but all the private institutions and everyone. And my perspective has always been there are a lot of people in our region who could benefit from higher education who have not been able to yet. And so we're not going to compete ourselves into oblivion. And so how is it that we can come together to make sure that we're collaborating for the sake of the region? And I think some of what you have been involved in education, be it pre-K or higher education or however it looks, really has spoken to the whole notion of how is it that we can work together? How can you convene people, or how can people, you know, come together to work on some of these larger initiatives?
Yeah, I think we're very holistic about it in terms of, and I think it's why there's such a heavy focus on pre-K now, just because, and we've been working closely with Dr. Durant for a lot of years on things. And one of the biggest challenges is kids who come in unprepared for kindergarten. They don't come from a family environment that they are really ready for this next step. So, you know, that just became a real focus area of saying, where can you make the most difference for people? It's early on, because then they will themselves, you know, and they will have the motivation and the love of learning. When kids learn to read, they're so excited. But, you know, for a lot of kids, that's a challenge. And if you're starting out not really quite ready to be able to absorb that learning as you're coming into the school system, it's easy to fall off and have all kinds of other issues that come. So, yeah, I think we've just, you know, we're conscious of, we're involved in a lot of the different social service things around town, too. And just the recognition that, you know, that's a place for us. That's a place that we can kind of focus some energy and try to make it happen. Not easy. These are big systems. There is expense to it, but it's an investment. It's not it's not an immediate payback.
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, because it takes years before you see the kind of, you know, return on that investment. And you mentioned Superintendent Durant and Toledo Public Schools. You have made a very special investment in TPS. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure, because we're very excited about it. So this is people, we have the highest regard for Dr. Durant, and particularly the fact that he is so creative in seeing what is it, this population of students for which he has responsibility, he and his team, what is it they really need to be successful in the world? And success can mean a lot of different things for different kids as they go forward. And he's moved into doing the magnet schools, where the students start quite early getting and end up with 2 years of college credit or certifications that they can get out and earn a nice high salary and be able to support families as they get out. And one of the latest ones is the teacher profession. And there is a shortage, it's well documented, a pretty severe shortage of teachers in the world these days. And teaching has become a more difficult profession because there are so many other societal issues that come into it also, and just the regulations, just lots of pressures on teachers. So the concept here, and that we just have been very taken with, is to a magnet school for educators, and starting to teach them where they will be starting in the seventh grade, will be moving through. And there's actually a program already that the first phases of it, where they're doing aspiring future educators, it's called, but sort of a club system for kids who are interested or believe they are, that they get all kinds of experiences. And there's an absolutely amazing young woman who is heading this effort. She's doing the aspiring educators now and will become the principal, and just buys into this so completely. So they will be totally prepared, and it will be experiential. So they're out there early on. You know, they'll be working with other kids. They'll be doing tutoring with younger kids. They will be out there shadowing in schools. They will get into being involved in the schools. We had done a previous program that was a partnership between TPS, Boys and Girls Club, and the University of Toledo. I led at the University of Toledo and with education students there. But for those who wanted to serve in an urban environment, get them connected into the Boys and Girls Club early. Sort of start that process when you are not in a teaching mode. You are in there as a volunteering, as a friendship, as a, you know, almost big sister, little sister, little big brother kind of arrangement, where you see the kids as kids, where you're dealing with kids who need those kinds of older role models. But it helps them as they come through, and then it's a whole cohort system as they're going through their education training, that they learn from each other, and they are intentionally placed into some of the more challenging schools so that they are getting that experience with a skilled teacher, but coming back and sharing their experiences so that they, you know, they're prepared for all kinds of situations, because they take turns having what a really difficult thing happened this week. And did I handle it right? Did I not handle it right? What now? So that got us highly educated, kind of forwarded into, because Durant was part of that too, forward into the whole Educator Academy, starting even younger.
And one of the things I learned as the non-traditional dean of education, if you recall, at the University of Toledo, I learned pretty quickly that kids would come to college and say, I'm not sure what I want to be. Oh, I think I'll be a teacher. And then they get to be juniors or seniors and they go, well, I'm not sure I really want to be a teacher anymore. But oh, by the way, got to graduate. So they graduate, become teachers. 1 to 2 years later, they leave the teaching profession. And I've had this discussion with Dr. Durant. So part of what he is trying to do, not just because of that, but that reinforces it. Let's give kids early the concept of teaching, and let's find out before they get to college. And the same thing could be said of engineering or anything else. We need in the K through 12 area to expose kids more to not just English and math and physics, but to the world of work and what might they really be able to focus on in college. So that's happening now. And I think it'll be a few years before we know. I'll bet you that we change the paradigm at least at the University of Toledo.
I really hope that there are more people who are interested in education as a profession, because I think that there's been a number of well-documented stories about teacher shortages, about people who aren't going into education overall, about some of the frustrations because of some of the societal changes. The pandemic certainly has exacerbated a lot of things in the classroom for a lot of teachers. And so we're excited about what's happening with the Academy, and we're really proud to be part of it at Scott Park for that magnet school and that partnership that we have with Toledo Public Schools University in Toledo and Owens to be part of it. And, you know, when the gift was announced to be able to move that Academy forward, it really spoke to this is how we come together as a community to be able to move initiatives like this forward. And so I'm excited for what students are going to get out of it, and I'm excited for what that means for our community.
Well, and one of the things that we need to do in education, higher education, as well as K through 12, is we need to expose to kids to more than just sitting in a classroom with a blackboard or a computer and hoping they learn. And I can tell you that Dartmouth is an example, but UT now is. Of course, it started with the engineering program, where there were co-op programs, right? Where those kids, we always hired 6 or 8 co-ops. And, you know, so those kids really are getting, you know, into the whole profession and learning not just what books will teach you, but lots of other things. And now they're trying to give that experience at UT. And this is one of Holloway's thing to every kid. How do we get people that are going into philosophy and other things to go out into industry while they're going to school? So I think we've got a lot more between technology and transportation and all, we've got a lot more capability to do certification instead of you got to sit here for 4 years and get a degree and all of these things. So and that's part of the reason we need this collaboration between Owens and all the other universities.
Absolutely. We agree with you. And, you know, we've been talking about learn and earn opportunities for a little while now. Like, it's very common for engineering students to have co-ops. In certain majors, it's really part of it. And, of course, it's embedded in teacher education with student teaching and observations and such. And health professions, because they go out in clinicals. But there are so many others. And when you think of students who, you know, a lot of majors very much dictate, or there's an assumption of what your job is, right? If you are in bookkeeping or accounting, chances are you're going to be a bookkeeper or an accountant. But if with other majors that are more general, if you don't have some sort of work experience, it's harder for you to gain meaningful employment after you graduate. And so we're really excited about being able to move into that kind of trajectory a little more with a lot of the fields that are available to students, because it gives them a more realistic perspective. They can graduate with actual experience. So when they look for a job, they already have an idea of what it's like. A lot of the universal skills that employers talk about that students don't have, you learn them while you're doing some sort of, you know, experiential learning about, you know, what is work culture like even.
So, and I'm sure you know about another program that we're helping support called The Fifth Year by Jim Pollack. And his brilliant concept is, after these kids graduate from high school, let's give them a year of not just off, but let's put them in a program where they experience a lot of different things. And so he's got something like 50 organizations and companies that are willing to take these kids for a few weeks and so forth. Now, again, we'll see it. But my instincts are, and already it's beginning to show with some of the kids, it's a great way to give kids, and they're getting paid, by the way, to do this.
That makes a difference.
You know, they're living on a college campus.
They're living at Lourdes.
They're living at Lourdes and having some classes there about personal management.
Yeah.
And so skill sets.
That's what we need
management.
Is creativity in education. You know, there are lots of different ways to get at this, and we need people like Jim and you and others who are thinking about that. You know, how do we use the world today, not the world that my mom grew up in?
Absolutely. Well, and I think with how people have changed, with how society's changed, I mean, we, you know, you talk about whatever the newest emerging technology is, AI, whatever it is, every few years it's going to be something. It doesn't matter if it's AI right now or something else. It's like, how do you help people learn how to take advantage of whatever their current context is? How do they evolve? How do they take advantage of either skills, abilities, connections, relationships that you talked about, creating those cultures so that it makes not only their life more meaningful, but to create a better community? Now, Betsy, you in particular have led and championed several organizations and community priorities. And so you were the first woman to chair the Toledo Area Chamber of Commerce. You were on multiple corporate boards. You've volunteered for many groups, including Corporation for Effective Government, United Way, Levy Campaign, Sylvania Schools. I don't know how you had time to do all that with everything else that you were doing with your companies. When you think about what you've been able to do, how do you help inspire other people to be engaged in their communities? And how do you inspire young people about the power of community leadership?
Yes, my simple answer to that is it has been so inspiring for me. As I sort of started that road way back, shortly after graduating from college and becoming involved in some volunteer things that gave me just such a different perspective of the world. They're very different than what you learn in an academic setting or sort of the protected space of a university or a high school or wherever it is. And it was, you know, it just opened my eyes. And at some point, somebody asked me what my hobby was. And I thought, you know what my real hobby is? Is community engagement. And I don't think, you know, I mean, I've never been paid for any of that. And I don't want to be because I'm getting a lot from it. You get the growth, you get the inspiration, you get the people around you, you get the chance to be continually exposed to what's going on out there and trying to help craft with others, you know, what are positive pathways? And then who else do you need to bring into that? And being a connector and sort of helping make things happen. So, you know, I guess my, I don't know if it's advice, but I guess the example, what I think, what I have learned in my own life is when something's there, when somebody's asking you to be engaged in something, and obviously you have to manage it some. I've also learned, had to learn how to say no.
Right.
It has to be something that you really do care about. And the same thing with leadership, that I, you know, was a very shy person growing up and as a young adult and never really pictured myself in a leadership kind of a position. But other people started seeing it. Because I cared, I think, because I was engaged, because I would follow through, because I would have ideas and I would be pretty good at bringing other people in. And I sort of have natural enthusiasm, as you know, for whatever it is. But I just, you know, I truly believe you get so much personal growth from that. You know, it helps, you know, keep reimagining, rebuilding your views of the world and what needs to be done and how, and then, and sometimes searching out, but often it comes to you. If you're out there, you know, you're thought of about, would you help with this? And something comes, and then would you share this? Well, I hadn't planned on that. I got six other things going. But yeah, I'm really excited about it. So the other piece I would say is I think all of that is energy giving. Much as a family is, much as friendships are, much as learning in any form is, it makes you a better person. It is greatly satisfying, you know, to be engaged with other people than always who are also caring about things and making things happen. You know, and that's where it takes a village. And that's why you build a village, is mm-hmm. people who care and want to do something.
She's the role model. That's what a teacher is, right?
I think they make you a better mom. You may, being involved in one thing makes you stronger in the other things you're involved in. Being a nonprofit, I know it made me far stronger when being involved at the company came because I had people I could go to. I had people who were going to support us, you know, who cared about providing advice when we needed it. They were happy to jump in because we both were, you know, out there in various places. So it's a mutually reinforcing kind of thing.
And I think that's an important concept because a lot of times, you know, people often talk about how they're so busy, but the people like the two of you, you're busy, but you still find it a priority to engage in the community. And for you to talk about the mutually reinforcing aspect of it, you know, it's like we're not singularly, you know, focused, or we're not one dimensional, you know, as human beings. And even, you know, Tom, going back to what you talked about for your college going journey, you know, understanding that, yes, you were learning engineering, but you also understood a more humanitarian perspective about why it's important. And so there's kind of that interdependent type of relationship with where you choose to spend your time and where you choose to study.
I also think it's tremendously important in raising children. I think that because, again, your parents will always be the first role models for their kids, and seeing them engaging and helping others, seeing how they treat other people, how respectful that is, and their openness to taking on new things. Kids absorb that. So, you know, again, that's a legacy that we all leave. Through all of this, the people we've touched, and most particularly our own families.
Absolutely.
How that's helped them.
I mentioned this a little bit earlier in our conversation, but I've always been an admirer of the partnership that you both have. And so not only in your family, but in your community involvement, in the businesses that you've developed and grown, what advice do you give people? Like, as people are just starting off, whatever aspect of their life it is, you know, true partnership is not something that just happens. And so how did you figure out? Was it something magic in that letter he wrote when you were sick? Was it, you know, something else?
Although maybe that was the start of it.
Betsy probably could answer this better than I, but my initial reaction to that question is, and I'll use our business as an example, collaboration is a better way to get to an answer. For example, one of the things that I did at our companies was continually create teams as opposed to sit at the top and give orders. And what I found was that a lot of the innovation that we did came because there was collective input, collective discussion, whereas any one of us could not have come up with the brilliant answer. And so, you know, to your question, I think one of my pieces of advice to people, whether it's with community or business or families, is whether it's the family or get them involved. I mean, like your kids, don't give orders and don't punish just to punish. Reward them for doing something good, for example. And what is it? So I think it's that collective input.
Yeah, and I think that there's so much to be said for respect and appreciation of what other people are and what they bring. And looking to them and appreciating we all have different strengths. So, in fact, you know, I mean, we are, in our case, we had very distinctive kind of role silos that we had, but we always talked about them and, you know, sharing back and forth. And just because that was your area didn't always mean that was the answer, but it also meant you were the one with the most information about it. So it was, had a heavy weight, but really, you know, being the people you're around, just having that respect for them. Solves a lot of problems. Even when you disagree about things, you can do that or have different ideas. And I think asking people what they think is a really valuable piece too. Make sure that you're sort of aligned. The other thing I thought about was thinking about at some point was just having a common value system. I think within our company, I think for us, between us, you know, the things we value in life and what we learn from our parents and hopefully carry forward. But within the company, everybody took on the same sense, part of which was that curiosity, that innovation, you know, we can do it, the desire to do it, the hard work that went into the trials and errors and bouncing stuff off of people. But sort of having that common value system around that about this is a great way to work. Nobody wanted to be in their own silo. There may have been clashes between the areas of responsibility sometime and being sure you had to have the communication strands being strong. That mattered to everybody. If you're expecting me to do this, be sure I know the details of what you need me to do or it comes apart. But it's not really so hard when you think about it. We've all got a common objective in life. In relationships, keep that in mind. And it's not so hard. It becomes very natural. And if everybody sort of falls within that, and then you have to deal with if people are going to be difficult about it, then you got to sort that out a little bit. Or it can, be a little toxic to others in the environment. But for the most part, people are inspired by the opportunity to be part of a really good team.
Well, I really believe that people want to give their best at work, and especially if it's something that they're passionate about, that they're knowledgeable in. You spend too many hours at work for it to be drudgery. And so to feel as though you're contributing to a greater good is very meaningful.
And feeling that your input is important. I mean, that's the getting together with a team. And, what do you think? As opposed to here's what you ought to do.
Two other things I think are always helpful. One is saying thank you.
Uh-huh.
I think, people won't, they're very thrilled to be appreciated. That just is a lifter for everybody. Just the power of a smile, of a friendly smile, because you're acknowledging people. I think anything that acknowledges people in a positive way is just incredibly helpful to, getting good things done.
Absolutely.
As easily as possible.
Well, and I remember, speaking of mentoring, I remember a former supervisor years ago who talked about personality and how, someone is always happier to work for someone who they get along with, who they feel cares about them, all of those versus the reverse. So it makes a big difference.
It makes a big difference.
It does. So the two of you are synonymous with innovation and education. And so you mentioned the word legacy in terms of your children and the role modeling and everything like that. How do you hope community members, your family, people in your companies, what's the legacy that you're leaving to them and to Northwest Ohio?
If you just ask me what legacy I want to leave, it really is my kids and my grandkids, as opposed to really anything I did. Now, reflected in that is what I've accomplished. But if my kids and Our 12 grandkids, by the way, from the ages of 7 to 25 now. You know, I think, and happily, fingers crossed, they're all on good pathways, all of these kids. So I think that our influence, not that we've raised them all, but, you know, our influence has helped put them on a path. And if you think what the world needs, it's people that are on a good path and are getting educated. Not that our 12 grandkids are going to make all that difference, but that's a legacy that I'm pretty pleased with right now, more than developing the first Pepsi bottle, actually.
But I would add to that, I guess I think, because sometimes we always thought with our company, they were our babies too. They were our people and their babies. Everybody would bring. I was always the mom, the hugger. They knew when they had a baby, they had to bring that baby in pretty quickly. And then they just had to give it to me for a while. Yeah, but it was the way we felt about people. But I think, you know, with the various things we've been involved in, I think we do carry, I would call it a pride more than a legacy. I think we feel good about the contributions we've been able to make, and which is also inspiring then to continue that path. It's, you know, it's a path that never has to end as long as we're here. So I think just being a hopefully a very helpful part of some of these significant things that have happened. We're mostly based here in the Community Times business. Our business obviously became worldwide. But right here is where it's maybe most meaningful. So the industry-wise, he's been recognized for that. It's in the Plastics Hall of Fame. That's not a small thing. But it's very satisfying that you were able to develop that because it speaks to the innovation and the capacity and the team building. But we don't think about it consciously, but it's, you know, I think it is what we're proud of, and hopefully it has a whole lot of lasting value.
I guess I would like to be a legacy, but it's not there yet. I mean, when I look at education, it's not just about teaching facts. To me, it's, especially in today's world, it's about teaching creativity, innovation, and thinking creatively. And, you know, if I had to look at the University of Toledo, for example, and I look back at my education, I'm promoting them to think about a Bachelor of Arts in Engineering as well as a Bachelor of Science. And the reason for that I've mentioned, and that is that you get all of the tools as well as the engineering and mathematical tools to think about how to use engineering as opposed to how to just do engineering. And so I would like to think that we could influence the world of education, big as it is, to think about teaching entrepreneurship and creativity as a fundamental part of education.
That is very incredible. When you think about how do people think, and is an entrepreneurial spirit something you're born with? Is innovation something you're born with, or can it be learned? And so what you're speaking to is how to help people be, you know, to create the tools, the mindset to be able to do those kinds of things.
Yeah, I mean, you can say that some people are more innovative and creative, just like some people are more musical or whatever. But I'll bet there's not a person in the world that you couldn't teach to play the piano if you really did it and they wanted to. You know, to answer that question, it's more learned than it is innate.
So as you think about what you're doing to help create opportunity for people, I mean, obviously there were the things that you were directly involved in. But when you think about the community at large, how are you creating opportunity for Northwest Ohioans?
Trying to influence people in a positive way. One of the things that I'm doing actually with Toledo Early College that I helped start, and oh, by the way, I'm still on the board, is I find myself when I'm at a board meeting, you know, reflecting on how we introduce the concept of creativity and innovation and so forth into the. So I think that's a place that we can, not just for that, but it's our influence, right? And we happily, because we're reasonably well recognized, have an opportunity and platform that a lot of people wouldn't have.
The other thing I think I'll throw in there, that because we see it as being maybe the soft way that some of the good things for the community develop. I think you're well aware that we're obviously heavily involved with the museum, with the Metro Parks, with the Live Arts Toledo, but the various cultural things that I think can appeal to people in different ways. To me, they are things that can bring people together. They can create useful conversations, useful learnings for the individuals, exposures, along with education. They are sort of, to me, the adjunctive pieces to that are also very important because they develop people in a different way. They develop their sensitivity, their sensibilities, their interactions with all kinds of people and coming to recognize, the commonalities. Again, to me, that's a piece. In today's world, I think it's a great need that it's easy to get into a silo. And it's really important that we not be just in our silos, that we be reaching out and in ways that can help uplift, so many people. And sometimes they'll uplift better there, being uplifted there may give them the chance to perform better in school, to have some of the other opportunities, to have a pride in themselves that will take them forward.
And if you want to go back to one of our earlier conversations, and you probably know these statistics, but in Toledo Public Schools, Dr. Durant will tell you that 80% of all the kids that come to kindergarten are unprepared, meaning they don't know their numbers and letters and all that. Statistically, across the U.S., an urban kid who comes to kindergarten unprepared has less than a 1 in 2 chance of ever coming out the other end as a productive, responsible adult. So if you had to pick the one thing in this world that we wanted to do universally, won't happen overnight, but to change that equation on the back end of the life equation, it would be just that. So that's still my mission. Nobody can fire me or pay me any less.
When you talk about how you create opportunity, I mean, you speak very much of what is it that you can do to use your influence, your relationships, and leverage them to make the community a better place? And how is it that you use, Betsy, your engagement and your involvement in different community organizations to improve the quality of life, those reciprocal type of relationships that we spoke of earlier? And so I'm very grateful to the both of you for what you're doing, because you're able to advocate in a way that a lot of us, to your point, may not be able to for a variety of reasons, be it time, access, employment, whatever it is. And so having people like you who share values for what's important to people of the community is a benefit to all of us. And I'm very grateful to you both for that. Tom, Betsy, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. Your commitment to our community has shaped not only industries, but the quality of life in Northwest Ohio. And I'm grateful for your friendship, your mentorship, always asking questions, always being there for examples and for continued mentorship. And so I appreciate both of you, and I'm glad you're here today.
Thank you, because
we appreciate,
as we discussed, we really believe that the world of education is fundamental to where this world has to go. And so we need people in place that A, believe that, and B, are committed to making it happen, even with all the barriers. So thank you.
Thank you. Betsy and Tom, thank you so much for being with us. You are such an inspiration, and your commitment to our community is unmatched. Thank you for all that you do. And thank you to all of our listeners. Please remember to subscribe and join us for future conversations. Until next time, take care.